Okay. Well, we're starting off today. I thought I had Jimmy Cliff scheduled, but maybe I messed up. You never know. It's been that kind of an end of year, that kind of a holiday weekend, when maybe, the left brain and the right brain aren't yet in full coordination. And you think you're doing A, but really you're doing B. So it's one of those days. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and here's what we are going to be doing today. We're going to be doing the same thing we left off before the holiday, which I hope you not only enjoyed, but you found meaning in, and it prepared you. Or will prepare you for what's to come, because there's a lot to come. And we want to talk about that. What we're looking to do is continue the conversation as we close out the old year and warily make the transition into the new. We're asking Lead Stories listeners to revisit issues and events that shaped 2018, and likely will continue to be of major concern in the coming year. On a parallel track, we're discussing whether we were prepared for the first half of President Donald Trump's administration and presidential term, and whether we are prepared now for the next 2 years. So that's it. We're taking a look at major stories that emerged in this year as it phases out, and that would likely continue to be dominant in the news and consequently in our attention in the coming year. We're looking also to discuss whether we were prepared, as we look back, whether we were prepared for the first half of President Donald Trump's administration, and how does it look in terms of our preparedness for the next 2 years? 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get started. As soon as you can put your points together. And truly, we want to stay close to the topic because we're trying to be purposeful. So we're looking at things. I'm making my notes as to what you say is important for this current year, for the few days that are left of it. And so when we begin the new year, we have a sense of direction as to where it is we ought to go in terms of the discussions we want to have, because you have identified certain things that are important. So we're finishing out the year that way. There's a lot to discuss, and it's kind of scary, really, that usually you'd think that at the end of a year, things slow down. Not with this president. We have an acceleration, and not in a good way, with this president as the year closes out. So, what would you say are the critical issues of 2018 as you see them, as you see them? And what would you say you would expect to be critical issues in the coming year? Are we prepared? Because this is the other side of the discussion. I mean, we could talk a lot and point fingers at what happened and didn't happen, who was responsible, who was not responsible, and that kind of thing. But we want to think differently in the new year, and that is analytically. Where did we fall short? What yardage did we gain? And what do we see as brewing major challenges for us as a community in 2019? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. So let's get the conversation going. As soon as you're ready, so am I. I'm waiting for your call. 888-874-4888. In the meantime, while we wait for you to come in, you notice that there are many stories that we've talked about from a particular perspective that happened to blow up as major stories. But we were ahead of the gang. We spotted them and we talked about them. And the latest example is this issue of real estate, the real estate wars that are brewing and that are causing great havoc all over the country, especially in major cities, but not just in major cities. We have a lot of upheaval in the housing market, and this is specifically crucial in the so-called affordable housing market. It's going to be brutal in the new year. Okay, Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air. You get us started today.
Okay. If you don't like where this is going, then you can change the subject, Utrice. By the way, greetings. Hope everyone had a good holiday. I'm thinking the situation could develop within a year or two where the electricity will go off and it won't come back on. So people should think about where they're going to get their water, how they're going to get it out of the ground, or purify the nearest pond water, you know, with a portable or countertop water purifier. The next thing I want to get into is when people get hungry enough, things are going to get real crazy. So when there's no water, and then in turn when there's no food, and this could happen in a very short amount of time, the trucks could simply stop rolling from the distribution centers. I get the feeling that just about every person I see passing on the street would just as soon eat me as look at me when he or she gets hungry enough. So how do the people, question I'm going to pose is, how do the people who would rather starve to death, which I consider myself one of, as a group, defend themselves from the cannibals? If anyone has seen
Aren't
the
you a bit, isn't this a bit extreme in the
It's
sense
meant to
that
scare. It's meant to
what are the
provoke. It's meant to
indications
get
that you
people
see
thinking.
now that this is likely to happen in the next year?
How about the crash that Goldman Sachs so, you know, arrogantly predicted? They're not even trying to hide it anymore. All the sources are saying late 2019, bingo. So the infrastructure could simply vanish in as short a period of time as anyone could imagine. And so I want to provoke people to jump ahead to that scenario and reorder their lives and get out of the bubble. Pop the bubble everybody's in, you know.
I
So
appreciate the fact that you see a sense of urgency about the issue, but I'm asking, what indications did you or have you did you see or have you seen in 2018 that would lead you to believe that this scenario is about to happen in just a matter of days as the new year is ushered in?
Well, aside from what I said about multiple sources predicting a crash worse than the Great Depression, far worse in a year or so, there's this thing of all the saber rattling. There's no talk of peace. So the president is surrounded by some pretty nasty people. Chuck Schumer.
Okay, but I want to just get this clear.
You know,
it's one thing
Pence.
To say that, it's one thing to say that, you know, and you correct that so many different sources have pointed to the fact, oh, not as a fact, have pointed to the very real possibility of a crash. We started out talking about this very early on a year ago. We talked about a pending crash in the market. Okay. But you are saying that it could be as extreme as people cannibalizing each other. And you know, it's one thing to raise the possibility of a desperate situation. It's another to bring in something that seems to me to be so extreme. I'm wondering where you get your cues about so that you can raise such an extreme possibility. And aren't you being a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? You're pushing the envelope quite a bit when you're talking about people being prepared for the possibility that other people will be, you know, kind of roaming the streets looking for some good human meat to consume. I mean, why do you say
my hyperbolizing, which is what I'm doing, my hyperbolizing will seem like a silly joke when the real, when the reality of, take your pick of any number of cataclysms, pending cataclysms, that we should at least think about, commit some of our day to thinking about how bad could things really get. We've got this guy, this Bolton fellow, John Bolton, in, you know, What Things Precipitate My Thoughts, Bolton announcing that we are going to celebrate in 2019 in Tehran. We're headlong over the, you know, just straight into war. It's not good for anybody, obviously, but when you get into situations like picking a fight with Iran, which is picking a fight with Russia and in turn China, you're not just picking on Grenada we don't like to pick fights that we can't win, but we're about to. And things can get extremely bad from there. So
I understand, you know, that, but I'm just cautioning that we don't, you know, go so far out of bounds that we begin to sound like, you know, we're living in a strange world where this is quite possible that people will be roaming the streets looking for other people to eat. Let's not be that extreme.
The movie Children of Men would give you a hint, but I don't want to go into detail. my personal nightmarish, hellish fantasy of what logistically occurs when people eat people, you know, in a systematic way so they can survive. It'll be armed bands, gangs of people.
Okay.
So how do the gangs of nice people defend themselves? It's just a question I'm putting out there.
I'm asking you, what puts you in that place, that comfort zone, with such an extreme prediction? Is it well thought out? Is it something that you see as a real possibility that just a few days from now we will have bands of people roaming the streets looking to kill and eat other human beings? I mean, that raises an alarm in the extreme. I don't think that is a good thing to do.
No, maybe it isn't, but I've broached the issue, you know, and I'm thinking of keeping some arsenic or something quick handy, and putting a sign on my neck that reads, eat me at your own risk.
Okay.
When I see them come.
Thank you for getting us started today. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Rachel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Utrice, and to the PRN family. I hope you had a great Christmas holiday. I'm going to keep it brief.
I slept right through. I slept right through it and then woke up confused as to what day it actually was. But I like when I sleep that way, and I really needed it.
Well, I'm just going to keep it brief because I'm at work. I think the most crucial issue for me for 2018 and moving forward is just basic survival as a human being, especially when you brought up the issues about what's going on with housing, as far as with gentrification, and what's going on with NYCHA, because I feel that this is being done deliberately. As far as
NYCHA being the New York City Housing Authority.
Correct. I feel I don't live in I never lived in housing, but just to see what's going on, I feel that this is done being done deliberately as far as letting the NYCHA housing fall by the wayside. And I think they're doing that deliberately to push people out, like they're doing in Bed-Stuy, Harlem, where I live in Flatbush, to push the average person out, to the point where they have nowhere to go. And the sad part is the people that are coming in, they're not from New York. They're coming from outside of New York City. That's the sad part. A lot of these people come from Massachusetts, from Connecticut, Pennsylvania. They're coming from other states. They're not living here in New York. They're coming from other states. So as I said again, for me, it's just basic survival. And that's
so
my comment for today.
I think you're right in looking at a problem that is sure to hit us in the new year. What are you thinking in terms of the reaction so far? Do you see people reacting? Or do you see people waiting for somebody to solve the problem?
To me, the basic problem is, and as an African American, and as far as my people in general, I feel that we've lost a sense of community. Where I was born in '65, and when I was growing up, we used to have a sense of community. We used to look out for one another, and unfortunately, we've lost that. And I don't think we're still in the sleeping mode. We still don't see what's going on. We're still looking for the politicians. We're looking for people to save us. And as a Black American, we need to wake up and stop looking for people to save us, because they're not going to. We have to start going back to the grassroots like we did back in the day and start looking out for our own. And we've got so far away from that, and it's so sad. I think out of all racial groups, we're still, Black people in general, we're still at the bottom of the totem pole, and we're still not getting it. And that's the sad part.
As you see it, how do you think you personally will be involved, if you are going to be involved in doing something about it? What do you see yourself, where do you see yourself situated with regard to this problem?
To be honest with you, please just try to get more involved in my community and just wake people up and just, you know, try to get people to get more involved and listening to shows like yourself, Gary Noll, and to be more diligent as to what's going on. You have people that need to wake up. They really do. They really
no
do.
Question.
And just try to educate.
That's important.
That's really all I have to say.
The good thing is to, as you correctly identified, a major problem. It's going to be with us, and it's going to be very intense, because we're talking about entire communities being cleared of the people living there now, with no indication as to where are they supposed to go and what will become of them in terms of this basic human need called housing. So this is something that we have to be prepared for. This is coming down the pike. In fact, it's already here. Thank you, Rachel. Thanks for
your call
today. Thanks. 888-874-4888. We are closing out the year trying to get a sense of not just what the big issues were that we identified in the current year, which is ending, but what do you think is likely to remain a major issue, and whether we dealt with it well in 2018, whether we have a chance of dealing with these problems well in 2019. Ron from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm going to keep it really short. The rollout of the 5G technology, the 4G, that's fourth generation radiation microwave, has just about done in the bees. It's doing a great number on the birds. So I'm really concerned, you know, people like Elon Musk launching satellites into space. The spokesperson for the FCC, also a lobbyist for Wi-Fi, in 2016 gave a very scary speech, which can be seen on David Icke's 5G videocast, the latest one. He has several. So I'd say the one from April 16th of 2018. 5G is going to just microwave everybody.
So why, in your mind, is this a big issue? Why is this an important issue?
Because, of course, again, it's all about the money, Utrice, and not the deleterious effects it's going to have on all life on the planet. So, you know, they're rolling it out. They're doing the promotional stuff. But as I said, this very scary man from the FCC reveals the agenda. He's quite transparent. He's a very mean-sounding man, and that's why Mr. Icke included that in his videocast on 5G. It's got to be stopped, and I'll say this. The only way to stop it is grassroots, town by town, like towns have refused.
Give us an idea of what the essential issue is. What is the main concern that you have about it?
That people like Elon Musk are making decisions for me. With other agencies, without any, you know, asking of the public. Do you want this? Is it good for you? They're just promoting all the benefits in communication, how much more powerful your bandwidth is going to be, etc. You know, how many more games you can play. You know, it's selling more gimmicks and devices. So it's all about the money. Again, no one's thinking about the health issues. 4G is bad enough. We should ban that. 5G is going to be so much stronger, you're going to see little box antennas all over the neighborhood, even in the suburbs. So, and there's going to be cameras watching these little boxes. So as far as that type of resistance, that won't work. Towns have to vote this stuff out before it arrives, because it's going to be everywhere. We'll be bathing it 24/7. With no defense, no shielding at all, because it's a different animal than 4G. It's way more powerful. So I consider that, you know, having heard about that in 2018, that is that's a very real threat that scares me.
Thank you. Thank you for putting that in the pot for us to consider in the new year. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How are you?
Good afternoon, Utrice. When you proposed a possibility of talking about certain things for next year, the thing that comes to my mind is a human right, as far as I'm concerned, and that is housing for all people. And I think we need to reverse the policy of the federal government when it eliminated the public housing products, and back in the 50s, they stopped building public housing products. We need to reverse that and start a new system that makes public housing a choice for people. If someone wants to live in public housing, regardless of income, regardless of wealth, one can get a public housing accommodations for himself or herself and the family, and only pay a certain fixed amount according to what that income of the person is, whether it's 10% or less or more of that person's income. So this would handle the housing situation that's all over the country, where people have no accommodations to live. All these programs where they give private contractors tax breaks and subsidies and all that kind of thing, to build private for profit making housing should be eliminated. The government should have a policy of building public housing, no profit involved, just expenses paid by the people who live there. And that would handle a great deal of people who are without places to live. That's one thing. Now, the other thing I would suggest is a situation where the United States government would make it absolutely impossible for there to be unemployment. There should be a program get going that would we get going by the government that provides every single able-bodied person who can work a job, a guaranteed job of one thing or the other, all for the social good of the people that live in the country, whether it's infrastructure or other social benefits that would occur by everyone being guaranteed a job. That's no such thing as homelessness and destitution of lots of people, because everyone is guaranteed a job. And I think that would be a wonderful thing. And we have to do, as a result of that, you would have a great reduction in the number of people who are in prisons and so forth, and do get public housing in prisons at maybe $100,000 a year. And that would be, to a large extent, eliminated. So that is my that would be my goal in terms of aiming for what is beneficial for the masses of people that live in the country, rather than the small ruling class who at this time runs the whole place.
But you understand that these two things that you've pointed out, housing and full employment, are completely antithetical to the capitalist model. The capitalist model is that there should be no equality in terms of people's access to strategic resources such as housing and full employment. You got to go get it yourself. You've got to make it happen for yourself.
Yes, you're absolutely right about what the capitalists say out of one side of their mouth. But the other side of their mouth says that they want all the help they can get by subsidies, all the help they can get by tax breaks, all they can help get, all the help they can get by funding for their projects. And so that is socialized. In other words, the people should pay for that, and the profit part goes into their pocket. So, you know, the capitalists, you know, it does not work for the people. This is a society where you have basically that economic system of capitalism in a large effect, that doesn't work for the benefit of the people. That works for the benefit of those who are in that capitalist class. And we need something better than that. And so I know what you're saying is true. They say, oh, you make it all on your own. But they don't make it on their own. They got these phony tax bills that give them big reduction in taxes, plus income tax law that is full of holes like Swiss cheese. So they don't pay anything, and the ordinary people or the masses of people are the ones who pay for everything. Things that they don't need, like a bloated military. Things that they don't need, like those people in Congress who work for the ruling class. So people need to do some studying also, We need more transparency when we look at these what I call crooks that sit in the legislative section of the country and local, state, and national level, and as well as executive branch, of course. But the point is, people have to wake up. You know, you're not going to get the Fox to help you straighten things out. You got to realize, number one, what's going on. And most people do not know what's going on. They're completely clueless. Most of them are subject to listening to corporate media. Television is all corporate. And these newspapers, they're run by corporations. And they're not going to put the things out that people need to know. And this is a critical problem that we have here, because there's no such thing as essentially free press, except people who are on PRN or some alternative media. It's most people have no clue. And that's what we have. So we have people who are in a condition of being completely clueless to what's happening. Their attention is diverted away from the real issue, and the real issue is the Fox. The Fox. See, the Fox always gets you to look at something else. The Fox or from that's Jamaica, you know, the little character that goes around and to steal the mongoose, steals the chicken. So, you know, the point is, people need to do a little more to work on that and take those two suggestions that I made about the improvement in a public housing, number one, and number two, guaranteed jobs.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call today and your contribution. Joe from New Jersey, what are you having to say today?
You know, I love your work.
I love your work, too.
Obviously. I'm calling because there were three things I thought I could contribute today. One of them is the troubling tendency to things being more and more difficult to find, including examples on the Internet when you have to click five places to get to your email, for example. This is unnecessary, but it relates to other stuff, like how things get more expensive because more links in the chain in delivery of a service or a product starts to be a means of somebody stepping in the middle and getting paid to be involved when there was already a system in place. Giving an example, like the USDA 5-pound cheese that used to be given out by government offices. Today, all those food pantries are tax-exempt churches and other nonprofit, quote-unquote, organizations. That troubles me. I mean, you can go so far as to become slightly paranoid about why it takes longer and longer to load a web page. Or if you update some of your software, everything changes. It was working fine. And if you're paying for a service like Skype, why did they change it? I was paying for a phone. Now it looks like a bad Twitter clone. That's the first two things. The need to be able to talk to each other with caring and consideration involving oneself in the exposure to what other people really think is important, because we take other people's word for some grand examination of how people are looking at events. And the best thing I've found is to talk to people, especially people I know a long time, because I'm often astounded that people are pointing at groups of people as a threat to being a threat to American identity. And I start to think of the blacklists and whether or not you're American enough. And it, just amazes me that that's more of a concern than the hidden gaming that's going on with loopholes in the law that make exceptions for people who can pay for them. I keep seeing examples of people who believe a lot of stuff but don't know a heck of a lot, and I feel sorry because I see the look on their faces when you explain something to them clearly and simply, and I know it can work.
But aren't you really tuned in to what the problem is? Are you hesitant about engaging?
Of course I am. I find that people have become offended and violent on some occasions. I think that that's a scary prospect. And again, in the 70s, I lived in another state near a river, and I was ready to start making vacuum tubes if the 20 megaton bombs fell. I do what I can on a local level. I talk to people and I reassure them that not everybody sounds like the last person they spoke to.
Thank you. Thank you for your contribution today, Ed. Thanks so much. Let's see. Oh, not Ed. That was Joe. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Therese. How you doing?
Okay, how about you?
I can't complain. Like I always say, nobody listens, so one thing I just wanted to reiterate, one of the callers was talking about that 5G rollout. And what a lot of people don't realize is this is for the first time in human history, humanity on a whole is being exposed to intense magnetic fields and intense radiation by these cell phones that we carry around and by these wireless networks that we carry around with. And nobody really knows exactly what is going on as far as how the physiological effects of these devices will have on mankind. And a lot of young people are using them. And there's evidence that these fields, with their, even though low-level radiation so close to the body, can cause structural damage, can cause genetic damage. So it's a concern that a lot of people are just not taking for granted because of the wide acceptance of cellular communication and Bluetooth communication.
So are you suggesting that this is something that needs to be talked about in the new year?
Oh, shit, this needs to be. Well, it should have been talked about many years before we became so open to accepting this. I mean, we're actually carrying around transmitters in our pockets, and some people can't even live without them. It's definitely a concern. We could be looking at, you know, just like with smoking many years ago when it was thought to be safe and the company suppressed the facts about cancer and the detrimental effects, and we had generations of people that were damaged by this. We don't know what we're looking at in the future as far as genetic defects or tumors or things of that nature. So, I mean, it definitely needs to be considered, and it definitely needs to be some type of stipulations or controls, at least looked at it in a clinical, objective light, and it hasn't been done.
Okay. What do you think you would be prepared to do as quote activist unquote on this problem?
Well, I mean, I've worked with WBI. I've also worked with Bernard White when he was active a few years back. We had Radio Visions on, we're trying to bring that back. Radio Vision, which is on the cable access network. I'm a producer there, a certified producer. And we're trying to bring that back so we can address some of these items. Because the main thing is education. I'll say a lot of callers have said it, but the most important thing is making people aware of what's going on and trying to sort through all of this spectacularism and propaganda and make people concentrate on what's important and what issues need to be addressed, especially in the advent of this government, because every day it's a clown show from the street ring circus that we got in Washington, D.C. So I think that's my part as far as trying to reproduce that program and bring up pertinent issues that need to be addressed. I think that's the main thing, is education, getting the stuff out there and getting it to the people who can act on it. Yeah, I'm trying to make myself a part of that for the future. We also, last time you had the program, also spoke about housing, which is another issue, gentrification in New York, and the war on the worker. The fact that the quality of, even though we're in a low unemployment, the jobs that are present are not good jobs. There's no security with them. There's no advancement. Our wages have been flat since 1975. There's no, you know, we've got jobs, but they're basically just light service industry jobs with no security. So all of these things need to be addressed. But people got to be made aware. You got to be educated, because the only way you can act is if you know what's going on. And the powers that be have dumbed down the society so much. The lack of education, the lack of interest, the lack of involvement. You know, there's an old saying that innovation is nice, but maintenance is the glue that holds everything together. You got to maintain. That's the main thing.
Thank you very much, Ed. Thanks for your contribution today. You know, all these suggestions that we are receiving, putting them in a pot. We have to get to some of them. We can't get to all of them. But it is important that we begin to think about what we can do about most of them with what we have and what we know. So this is a good exercise of trying to decipher just from the 500 million things that assail us every day, what can we, within our finite time and effort and energy and knowledge and resources, what can we successfully tackle? How do you rate? I was hoping somebody would kind of address that question. How do you rate the first half of Trump's presidency? How do you expect the second half to go? What do you expect would happen in the second half? And how should we be prepared for that? Were we prepared for the first half? I think the record speaks for itself. I think we just let this bulldozer go through our, you know, fertile soil, and we didn't stop it. And when I say we, let me be really clear about who I mean, to the people who represent us, the people who we vote for. And that seems to me to be a major issue that we cannot ignore. We were let down so terribly. And the people we had elected to, you know, take care of business just walked off the job or just let this thing fly without a credible response. So how do we turn that around? Can it be turned around in the second half of the Trump presidency? And if we can turn it around, if there's a possibility to turn it around, what will be necessary on our part? What do we have to do, or what do we have to be prepared to do? 888-874-4888. We got some very good responses today, I think. Rachel started us off with the idea of survival. This is a theme, as you know, that I stress all the time. You have to begin to put pieces, important pieces, and pieces that you could manage to put together to assure your survival, because what's on the horizon, and we've been saying this now on this program for 2 years, what's on the horizon is not pretty, and we will have to survive without, you know, further costing us our lives. So that is a major issue. Thank you, Rachel, for that. Ron from Connecticut talking about 5G technology, and I got the sense it's not just 5G technology, but that's where things are right now. But I get the sense that he was talking about further developments in technology that aren't going to help. They're not helping now, except that, you know, this is a new commodity. It's a moneymaker. People are excited about becoming consumers, very willing consumers for things that are not necessarily going to do them any good. So that is something that we have to look at. David gave us two special recommendations about housing for all. That is a major task. And how do we go about it? That's what we have to talk about. And employment, full employment, how is that to be achieved? We certainly haven't achieved it yet. Joe from New Jersey talked about the internet, and that links to what Ron from Connecticut was talking about. We really haven't understood the internet, many of us, and the implications of the internet. What was it designed to do? What was a good thing that they sold us about the internet and got us all enmeshed in it? We're all, in one way or the other, being wafted along in this world of technology without understanding what it is, what it can do, what it is doing, and what it has done to further complicate our society based on who has access to knowledge, who can manage knowledge, and now you create entirely new subsets within our society, which will have a major impact down the road. It's already happening. People who do not know how to work the internet, who are not familiar with certain levels, especially, you know, increasingly higher levels of operation of the internet and use of the internet, are being left behind. Is that fair? Personally, I mean, I can, you know, do a thing or two, but I'm by no means an expert on the internet. And, but I am, and as many people are, I have skills that could be used in different ways. There will be an arbitrary drawing of the line that would say people like me are no longer useful because you cannot manage the information. You cannot, the information overwhelms you. You are totally outside the realm of information, which makes you powerless. And it will create entirely new segments of society based on acquisition and management of knowledge. You see, that's already happening. So that's a very important contribution. Ed from Queens talking about the need to return to community and return to community education. It's going to be one of the most important weapons that we will have. And yet we have not really formalized that. We have not put it in a way where communities have a methodical way to respond to anything. We're usually scattered, and when things happen, it's when we begin to do all the things that should be happening all the time, constantly organizing, constantly educating, constantly investigating to find out, you know, just how is our community morphing? How is it reshaping itself? What are the factors that are reshaping our community? Are we in charge of those things? Can we, are any of these things good for our communities and new generations? All these questions I think we have to ask. And if you noticed, I'm going on the assumption that everybody can be involved in the community. Everybody can be involved in one way or the other. And so the first step is awareness, and then we go from there. We start discussing things. Cece from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Thank you so much, Nutrice.
Thank you.
And a great year coming up for you and all of the Lead Story leaders, LEADERS. And I do have something for you from a previous show from Louisiana, and that was Justin Wilson, the Cajun chef.
Yeah, the chef.
Remember? Yeah, he was the person that would also he had some wonderful comedy. He would say that money was no object; he didn't have any. So that was some of his pieces that I used to listen to in the 70s. So, and the excellent gourmet. What I am in total agreement with what you're saying and getting involved in the community, and I'm going to take a page from, I believe, Jeff's thoughts and a few other, quite a few others of the Lead Story leaders, and that is the church. It's kind of the churches, the synagogues, the masjids, the houses of prayer, the temples. They're just sitting there. Actually, that's not true. They're there. And we know somebody that knows somebody, as well as the fact that we are, many of us are members or have been, and we can go back in and get permission from, you know, the proper authorities to present that this is where we are mostly organized. Dr. King took that organization and Abernathy and many, 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 many others and made something happen. We came out of being lethargic, being crystallized, being in a golf ball state. So we need to do that again now, because it's ready. It's turnkey, actually. Maybe we may have to get to take a Toastmasters, a few sessions with Toastmasters, so we can speak comfortably to the authorities or to a group. But they have always responded or will respond when they know the state of affairs. So that's my piece there. I do think there is something, there's a lot to the 5G. It's like the pharmaceutical industry. Big Pharma puts out pharmaceutical products, medicine, and they haven't tested it. They didn't have to get it challenged because of the lobbying. And the same thing has happened with the 5G, having some knowledge in reference to cellular. We also need to think about public banking. And something to press from the Bank in Dakota that's over 100 years old that the private banks have been trying to put them under, and the people have stood. So we've got a lot of power. We have the power, and we need to be reminded that we, the people, are the power. And the only power that the opposite, or I should say the opposite, but the other folks have is putting their money together, and they do a greater job of pulling each other into their crimes. But we do have it, and we need to remind ourselves that how powerful and that we are our own heroes and sheroes. And we can't expect them to do it for us. You know, they say, as you know, in politics, as soon as you get elected, you got to start raising money. So who are you working for? the people who give you the money, because that's the problem that we allowed to happen. So we allowed so many things to happen by being misled, misleading ourselves, thinking that someone's going to do it for us. No one's going to do it. We can do it, and the time is now to do that.
Which piece of the pie will you chew on?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing now. I'm talking to people everywhere I can about getting involved. We had over 100 people win that are ready to make a difference. I'm going to get, I speak both to getting involved in organization, getting involved in getting people out to vote and to work on suppression and all the things going on. So it's a combination, and also building the heroes, building myself as a happy hero that can make a difference in the planet. So we're all heroes, kind of in a sleepwalk or sleep at the post, and we need to just snap out of it somewhat.
We need to snap out of it. But thank you so much for your contribution today. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions, because this is how we get ourselves ready. We start thinking about things, and we cross-pollinate ideas, and somehow something will come out of it that would make people get off their butts and say, well, look, now I have an even clearer picture, not only of what is going on, but how I can do something, how I can contribute. So this is our first stage, and we're hoping to build up to some kind of an action mode in the new year. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.